Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Moeller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Moeller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Moeller Program, broadcasting to you live today from Destin, Florida. The news finally came this morning. 9:05 was the time of death for Terry Schiavo. She passed away this morning after 13 days off of life support, and that means not a ventilator, of course, but in her case, merely food and hydration. Her feeding tube was removed on the 18th of March. And by the way, one of the things we need to realize out of all of this is that her underlying health was obviously good, because otherwise she could not have survived this long. It tells us that this was not a woman facing an imminent death. This was rather a woman who deserved to continue to receive what all human beings have a right to receive, and that is food and hydration. But again, the news came about 45 minutes after her death at 9:05, and as this has been one of the largest news stories of recent American history, it also received worldwide attention. And as soon as the news was out, the conversation immediately shifted to what does all of this mean? We're going to hear several of the most important statements made about that, especially by the President of the United States and the Governor of Florida. First, President George W. Bush on the death of Terry Schiavo.
Today, millions of Americans are saddened by the death of Terry Schiavo. Laura and I extend our condolences to Terry Schiavo's families. I appreciate the example of grace and dignity they have displayed at a difficult time. I urge all those who honor Terry Schiavo to continue to work to build a culture of life where all Americans are welcomed and valued and protected, especially those who live at the mercy of others. The essence of civilization is that the strong have a duty to protect the weak. Cases where there are serious doubts and questions, the presumption should be in the favor of life.
Well, the president's exactly right. In the case of someone whose life is, as Terry Schiavo's, requiring only food and hydration, we must give preference. The presumption should be in favor of life. I especially appreciated the next to the last sentence made by the president when he said that the essence of civilization is that the strong have a duty to protect the weak. And that certainly is the essence of civilization. Without this, you have to wonder if civilization can exist. And that's why one of the big questions in the aftermath of the Terry Schiavo death is, now what does all this mean for this civilization? We have so frayed the fabric of our national culture in terms of the culture of life that a large percentage of Americans, it's debatable whether it's a majority or not, but certainly a large percentage of Americans simply felt it was right to remove her feeding tube and to let her pass away, even though, as we now know, it would take over 13 days for her to die with the removal of hydration and feeding. One of the leaders who was closest to this situation, not just in Washington, but here in Tallahassee, Florida, was Governor Jeb Bush. And he is, not only in this case, but as he's demonstrated in so many other arenas, solidly committed to the culture of life. And he is so, in, I have to say, in a very thoughtful and reflective way, and especially when it came to the situation of Terry Schiavo, where I think he acted nobly, courageously, and boldly, but came across the arrogance of a judiciary that would not respond. Governor Bush had several important things to say. We're going to hear them in series. First, hear Governor Jeb Bush.
It's heartbreaking, to be honest with you. My thoughts and prayers go out to her family, to all the people that wanted her to live, and to everybody. This was a very, very emotional couple of weeks, and I would hope that from this, that all of us can grow as people in terms of our appreciation for end-of-life issues. The mystery of life itself is pretty wondrous, and how we deal with life itself. I mean, the beginning of life and the end of life is something that I think we need to learn how to do better.
One of the accusations made against Governor Bush is that it was improper for the state to try to intervene, that this was a legal situation that should have been settled simply by the family and the courts. Of course, one of the realities of Terry Schiavo's tragedy is that the courts failed her. Even though there were 19 different court hearings, there was not in even one of the 19 a fair hearing of the facts. And instead, what we now face is that we're deeply embedded in a series now of laws and court precedents that are hostile to life. Governor Bush spoke about that also today.
And it's not all about laws, although I do think that there's probably some, and down the road we should reflect on this experience and maybe look at some of our laws. But it's also just as individuals, how do we prepare for these issues and handle it in a way that makes a little more sense than what Terry Schiavo had to go through.
Well, that is an understatement, and certainly I agree with the governor when he says it is a legal issue, but it's far more than a legal issue. And there are others who said it never belonged in the political sphere at all. And last, I want you to hear the Florida governor just respond to that accusation that it should have been kept out of politics and politics should have been kept out of her situation. Just hear the governor speak.
I don't know about the politics of this, to be honest with you. This issue transcends politics, to be honest. And I think she will be, her experience will heighten awareness of the importance of families dealing with end of life issues. And that is a incredible legacy.
Now, there is an on the one hand, on the other hand aspect to this, and that's what makes her personal tragedy now a national tragedy. And the man who I think has represented the culture of death more consistently than any other is George Filos, the attorney for Michael Schiavo, the man who was pressing for Terry's death, her husband, who was recognized as the legal agent to try to tell the court what Terry wanted. There's good reason to believe he was not qualified to do that. There are many reasons to doubt that there was sincerity and accuracy in what he had to say. But nonetheless, it was his attorney who was most often his mouthpiece who said the most insidious things throughout this entire tragic episode. And I want you to hear one final thing he said today that just is a capstone in his embrace of the culture of death.
We've heard the phrase a lot, the sanctity of life, respect for life, as the basis for the opponents to carrying out Terry's wishes in this case. And I would just suggest, since there seems to be a national debate and a national reflection on this, that perhaps a lot of the opposition to Mrs. Schiavo's death here had more to do with the fear of death rather than the sanctity of life.
Well, there you have it. I don't know how I could put it any better than he did. I would just put it in mirror image. He said it's really not about the sanctity of human life. It's about a fear of death. Well, George Filos has become a high prophet, a high priest of the culture of death. All you have to do is read his book, Litigation and Spiritual Practice. He considers one of the high water marks of his life and legal career the fact that he won the first famous right to die case here in Florida. He also has been pressing this as a national agenda. That's why he wrote his book. And he is not merely the attorney for this husband. He is a major and nationally recognized enthusiast for euthanasia. And he makes very clear we shouldn't fear death, but he has embraced it in a most macabre, weird, and frankly death-directed way that I think would shock most Americans. But what we have in this whole situation is a phenomenon of ignoring the obvious, and he has become the major agent for ignoring the obvious. The obvious fact was here was a woman who's being starved to death and led to death by dehydration, a woman whose death was obviously not imminent by other means. She survived for almost 14 days off of water and a food feeding tube. We're facing here a situation in which I think America had better learn some lessons very fast, or we're going to find ourselves sliding deeper and deeper into an embrace of the culture of death, an embrace of this thing packaged as the right to die, an embrace of euthanasia. And before you know it, we're going to be whittling away, negotiating away, and compromising away the dignity of human life, not only for people like Terry Schiavo, but for others. I mean, what else do we need to see? We already have now in Vermont a movement for euthanasia, for death with dignity, for assisted suicide. This in yesterday's New York Times. We already have this kind of constellation, a gathering of the clouds. We're beginning to see there's so many of these issues. Just a couple of weeks ago, I wrote about the Groningen protocols in the Netherlands, where doctors are euthanizing newborns who are considered to be either tragically deformed or going to experience pain. And they're saying this is done in the name of life. In other words, we kill in the name of life. That's the very logic of the Nazi physicians. That's the very logic of those who would redefine life as some accident between nothingness and death. We instead need to define death as the final enemy. We need to understand that the first medical criterion and ethical criterion of medical treatment is do no harm, cure, do not kill. any society that loses a clear focus on that is a society that is throwing away its own commitment to human dignity and will eventually sow the seeds for its own destruction. When we come back, we're going to be talking about this notion of living wills. I think this is the right day to do it because there's a lot of attention. A lot of people are saying the answer to this, the way to avoid a Terry Schiavo situation, is to sign a living will. We're going to be talking about it. I want to know, would you, have you signed a living will? If so, why? If not, why not? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be back to talk about the culture of death, a right to die, living wills, and much, much more. From Destin, Florida, I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program, broadcasting to you live today from Destin, Florida. We're talking about living wills here in the shadow of the death of Terry Schiavo just this morning. You know, a lot of people are now saying that the living will is the way out of this. Advanced directives, however they construed in terms of a legal document, some documentary evidence of how an individual would want to be treated under similar circumstances, especially with end-of-life decisions. Now, I have to tell you, I'm a bit squeamish about this. As a theologian, as a churchman, and as a pastor having to deal with this, I have to issue several caveats, several warnings about this whole idea of a living will. I have not signed one, though those who know me and love me have a very good idea of where I would be on these issues, and I trust them to make those kinds of decisions along with medical personnel. I want to tell you what my caveats, what my concerns are. Number one, you cannot anticipate every medical situation. You cannot know in advance the particular medical context in which life and death decisions may be made. For instance, if you say no extraordinary measures, there's a big question as to what exactly that might mean, because most people signing that would have no idea that feeding and hydration would be construed in Terry Schiavo's case as medical treatment rather than as just basic human necessities and human rights. And these are very complex medical situations. We all know that. Most of us have already been there in one way or another. And so I do think it's important that we give some general directions about our understanding of the nature of life, about our understandings about the necessity of medical treatment and what we would want. I think we need to be very clear about those things. And as Christians, of course, we put this in a context in which we know that this life is not all that there is, but there is a life to come because of what Christ has done for us. But even as Christians, we understand that this life has a particular dignity and meaning because the Creator made us for His glory and gave us the gift of life. In the New York Times, a story yesterday by Ann Kornblut telling us that the First Lady and the President have signed living wills. This is a statement from the First Lady, quote, "I hear the numbers of people inquiring about living wills or writing living wills increase dramatically, and I think that's really good. The President and I," she said, "have living wills, and of course our parents do, and they wanted us always to be aware of it. I think that is important for families to have these opportunity, to have an opportunity to talk about these issues." Also, U.S. News and World Report, a major sidebar article in its cover story on the Terry Schiavo situation and the life and death politics, according to its title. They mentioned the fact that the second warning about the living will is that in many ways they are not enforceable because no one really knows what they may mean. And it's not something that's just, you know, tattooed on your hand or forehead or something. And so if the person who says you have one doesn't have it there and the medical personnel do not know, they may act without any knowledge and they may act with the difficulty of interpreting what was meant by the person who signed it in the first place. So hear me, I'm not saying that the living will is categorically the wrong thing to do. I want to instead, with these warnings and concerns in the background, say that I think the most important use of the living will is for those who may be facing a medical situation that is more clearly anticipated. Such as someone who may have a terminal disease or someone who may be in the end stage of aging and the diseases that come with that and be able to say, look, in this case, death is probably the natural product of this disease or infirmity or of this process rather than being an aberration. And so there are people who say, I do not want extraordinary measures taken at the end. You know, about a year ago, we did a program on the do not resuscitate orders or advanced directives and how many emergency medical personnel either ignore them because of the policies with which they have to work, or on the other hand, you have some doctors who are over-interpreting these to mean more than just no extraordinary treatment, because it's all the devil, they say, is in the definitions, and so it is. I think it's a good time for us to talk about the whole question of the living will, because, for instance, U.S. News and World Report in this article says that just one website that normally had about 100 requests a day for a living will form had 4,000 just due, they think, to the coverage over the Terri Schiavo situation. Today, of course, we're mourning with her family. We recognize the tragedy of her life that we believe was treated without due dignity and regard for its sanctity. But now we're talking about the future and what it means for each one of us. And the living will is one of those options that is being suggested now even by the First Lady. I understand that. That's the conventional wisdom. But is it the wisdom we can follow? I want to know what you think. Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Akron, Ohio, where Rob's waiting on the line. Rob, welcome.
Doctor, if I can get your comments on two things. One, the priest today down there took every opportunity to say two tragedies today. One was a death and one was a killing. I thought that was great. Secondly, on the living wills, I think you're dead on. CNN reported today that the doctor is himself or herself actually interprets that living will. And to what detail you can put in that living will, I don't know. But it seems like we're putting maybe somebody's ultimate future in the hands of somebody that really probably shouldn't be making that call.
Yeah, Rob, let me just ask you straight up front. Would you or have you signed a living will?
We have not, but my wife and I are definitely talking about it.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that that's where the conversation needs to begin, is with a husband and a wife, with family saying, look, this is what we believe about life. This is what we believe about the dignity and sanctity of human life. This is what we believe about the value of human life. And so under these circumstances, we believe that the medical treatment should be continued, and we must contend for human life if there's any hope of recovery and if life itself can be continued. On the other hand, and of course that means right up front that nothing can be done to hasten death. In any form of active or passive euthanasia. But we do understand that death is a natural process. And by the way, we've read Genesis 3, and we know why. This is where human beings are not strangers to death. And even though we know that Jesus Christ has won the full victory over death, death, until the Lord returns and until the Lord consummates all things, is still an enemy with which we have to deal. And, that's just something every one of us has to face, our own mortality. But in the context of medical decision-making, I think it's really important that we make a distinction between those who are in a position where they may be facing an anticipated death by means of disease, or they may have reached an age where these kinds of issues are close at hand, you know, who knows how long, but people are trying to think these things through in a responsible way. I think in those contexts, some kind of advance directive would be very helpful. But even then, just realize someone is going to be interpreting what those words mean. But I'll tell you right now, if you're fairly young and you're not suffering from one of these diseases, I would have some real concerns about this. As a matter of fact, I would think the most important thing would be to have a conversation with your loved ones who are going to be doing the decision making. And in the context of Christian conviction and the culture of life, try to think these things through so that you can put together an approach where you would trust your loved ones to do the right kind of decision making if tragedy should strike, and they would be in a situation where, in consultation with medical officials, doctors, physicians, and all the rest, they would have to be making these decisions. By the way, I want to go back to something I mentioned the earlier program we did on advance directives. One of the specialists we had on the program at that time mentioned the fact that these advance directives are often written in a specific context. Someone thinks then that they're portable or transportable to a different context, only to find out that they are not. So some of you may even assign documents you think are adequately authoritative advance directives, but the medical personnel actually making the decisions may say no. One last thought before we go into this break, and we're getting ready to have more of your calls and to a really good conversation here. I want to say that when you look at these advance directives, you have to realize that sometimes tragedy can strike, illness can strike, things can happen where there will be no one there who will be able to tell people what you meant when you wrote this, unless you're investing this knowledge in the people around you, in your family, in the ones who are going to be the agents representing you. I wouldn't trust a piece of paper. I wouldn't trust a covenant, a legal agreement to accomplish that. And furthermore, looking at the case of Terri Schiavo, it's apparent to me that those who had pressed for death would be willing to do so under circumstances that might even include having a living will or advance directive, if indeed the definitions are where the debate would take place. I'll be right back. I want you to call 877-893-8255. Would you have a living will? Do you have a living will? If so, why? If not, why not? Give me a call. I'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We've been talking about the issue of living wills in the aftermath of Terri Schiavo's tragic death, and the calls by so many in our society, from the right and the left, from both sides even of the debate over Terri Schiavo about living wills, the encouragement that we should seek them, leave them, write advance directives, and all the rest. I think there's a point to be made there. I'm trying to be fair to both sides of this argument, but I want to be very, very clear that I have some major moral concerns and very practical concerns about these living wills. Because just to list the problems already, they are open to interpretation. They are not always portable. They leave a lot of decision-making in terms of definitions that are decided by persons in a moment of urgency. They cannot cover all medical situations, and we can't foresee, in many cases, even a context in which they might be used. And with all the warnings that have come from the Terri Schiavo situation, and we've learned a lot from this, haven't we? I mean, I think most Americans would not have considered that feeding and hydration would be considered forms of medical treatment. But now we know, according to the Supreme Court, upheld by all these different courts, upheld by all kinds of precedents and law, that's the way it is. I'm also concerned about anything about which George Filos is so enthusiastic. George Filos is Michael Schiavo's attorney. He's the man who was pressing for Terri Schiavo's death. And he made this a point during his statement today, and I want you to hear every bit of what he had to say about living wills, and we'll be back to talk about it.
You know, the law gives you the right to make your own medical treatment choices. That's one of the most personal and private decisions that you can make in your lifetime. At what point do you say medical treatment is enough and I don't want any more? And this case demonstrates more than anything could demonstrate that if you don't take personal responsibility and make your wishes known and do that in a formal sense, then your wishes may not be carried out, not only to your own personal harm, but to the destruction of your family and loved ones. So this is a clarion call to everyone to make their wishes known in an appropriate way.
You know, one of the questions I've been asked, a smart question, I would say, in terms of recent media appearances I've done on CNN, the Headline News Nancy Grace program, and conversations with different reporters, I've been asked the question, if Terri Schiavo had left a written statement, an unquestionable statement of her own intentions in this matter, would I respect it? And my response to that has consistently been this. I would respect it as a legal matter. In other words, I would respect the right that the law of this country says she has the right to establish that. I would not respect it as a moral statement in terms of the fact that I do not believe it would have been the right choice for her to have made. So I'd have to make that distinction between what she has a right to do or would have had a right to do and what would have been right to do. Those are two different things. And certainly I would have thought it inappropriate for a woman at her age, I believe she was about 29 when this happened, for her to have signed a statement saying that she would not want food and water if she were to suffer a brain injury like this and be in a state of some kind of minimal consciousness. But according to the law, George Filos says, we have a responsibility. That was his argument. We have a responsibility. Those are his words to determine such a document. Let's go very quickly to Barry, listening on WTBN in St. Petersburg, Florida. Go right ahead, Barry.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. With great regrets, I am missing you in Tampa when you were down here, and next time you're down, I'll certainly try to correct that.
Well, I hope so.
We had direct experience with my mother-in-law, who's now with the Lord, but for over 6 years, we back and forth between hospitals and nursing homes, and we thought we were doing things properly. We had a living will, we had a durable power of attorney, and we also had health care surrogate agreements. And the interpretation of these agreements came into dispute many times, back and forth between how the nursing homes interpreted, how the hospitals when she had to be moved back and forth. And many times when she was in very ill conditions and really not able to make her own decisions, and where the healthcare surrogates and the family should have been able to step in and help, the interpretations were, well, she's not unconscious. She still has the right to make her own decisions. And we struggled and fought for her because she was 80 some years old during this process. Much of the healthcare down here towards older patients, unfortunately, is they may not get the priorities and the emphasis and keep those folks alive. And, of course, we were fighting for our mother to know that she had the will to live. But you're exactly right. The interpretations of those are open to healthcare providers. And,
yeah.
It's very difficult. The family has to be very involved in.
Barry, I've got to go into a break here. I'm glad to meet you by phone, and I especially appreciate your call. You've raised the issue again of the fact that even for those who are in advanced years, talking about your mother, it's in the definitions that medical personnel are often going to interpret, and we may not have the say we think we're going to have. Be right back. I'm Albert Moeller. Have you now or do you in the future plan to sign a living will? If so, tell me why. If not, why not? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Paul calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes, how are you doing today, Albert?
I'm doing fine, Paul. Glad to hear from you. Go right ahead.
If I haven't thought about it until today, but if I was going to have a living will, being a son of God, since God doesn't speak out loud all the time to where people can hear, I would entrust my life to my brothers and sisters in Christ and have them do the will of God.
Okay, Paul, let's just talk about that for a minute. You know, legally speaking, this will fall either to your closest relative, the court recognizes, or to a medical agent that you would legally appoint. Have you taken that step?
No, I haven't. Like I said, today's the first day I thought about a living will, but
yeah.
If I was going to make a living will, I would go to my church and include them in it.
Well, Paul, let me just say, I think that is a genuinely Christian response, especially a Bible-believing, gospel-preaching church that understands that all human life is God's gift. I think that'd be a great place to go for this kind of consultation and a great place to go for this kind of help. You know, honestly, just looking at the necessity of some kind of legal agent known in many states as a medical agent to make these decisions, you might be a whole lot better off indeed with someone from your church that would have the medical insight and the background and more than that, the theological and biblical insight and background to make an informed decision there and one that's consistent with Christian principles. Let's go to Alan calling from Deer Lodge, Montana. Alan, go right ahead.
Yeah, but...
All right, we lost Alan from Deer Lodge, Montana. Let's just let me mention that the problems of the living wills I had been talking about a little bit earlier, just in terms of whether or not they work in all contexts. U.S. News and World Report pointed to this in quoting Carl Schneider, a law professor and specialist in bioethics at the University of Michigan. He said this: living wills often do not work. I've been appalled at the number of people who are saying, "Go online, sign the forms, and everything will be all right." He goes on to say, sometimes it's not all right. It's not enough to fill out a document. You need to do a lot more to back it up. Now, I think that Dr. Schneider here, the professor, is probably looking at this from a very different angle than I am. And the one point on which we agree is that they often do not work. And I'm trying to issue a warning that the direction of my main concern here is that sometimes it leaves the definitions so vague and the context so indeterminate that quite honestly, you don't know how this thing's going to be interpreted. You don't know who's going to be making these decisions. You don't know what it's going to mean. So when it comes to something like a living will, there are people who are downloading documents. They're going to websites. They think they're solving a problem when actually they may be creating more of a problem for themselves than actually solving one. This idea of a living will goes back to the fact that as litigation and as the law tried to catch up with developments in medical practice, Decisions came to be made that had not been required before. Just think of the advances in terms of medical treatment and medical science. If you go back a couple of hundred years, there were not many opportunities for something like a living will, because persons just died without recourse to the kind of advanced medical treatments that we have today. And yet, one of the most difficult issues in terms of today's medical science and practice is knowing what should be defined as an extraordinary measure and what should be considered just the normal and responsible medical treatment in a specific context. Because I can see, and we already know, that there are many physicians who may disagree in a certain context. We have family members who may disagree in a certain context. And so just thinking that you can sign a piece of paper and solve that, I think is not very reasonable. I think it can be an illusion. It can be pretty dangerous. And again, my main concern is you may actually, through that document's interpretation, forfeit treatments that you would not want to forfeit. I do want to go back, though, to the fact that we understand as Christians that death is a part of human experience. We understand it is the final enemy that we will face. And we understand that there is a term limit to human life. Just because of the nature of sin, because we are mortal beings, and the very essence of our mortality is that even as we were born, so shall we die. We understand that. And so that's one of the reasons why we cannot try to redefine ourselves through some kind of transhumanism or this kind of science that's trying to promise infinite life extension. We understand that that isn't going to happen. But all these advances in medical science have brought some end-of-life decisions, end-of-life quandaries and crises to us that require our keenest thinking. And as death is understood to be a part of human experience, unlike George Philos, we do not embrace it. That should be the least Christian response, but rather we acknowledge it. And there do come times when we know that medical treatment is not the right thing to continue, certainly in terms of these extraordinary measures. After all, we do know that there are diseases that kill. There are injuries that kill. And we do know that as a process of our aging, we come closer and closer to those end-of-life decisions. Sometimes there isn't a decision made, a massive heart attack, some kind of aneurysm, blood clot, or something that causes instantaneous death. But given the longevity of human beings, the lengthening of the lifespan, and the general increase in human health, we do have the reality that many persons are going to be in some state of lingering. And I think that's what produces the moral crisis of our particular time, because there are those who say, look, that's very expensive. And there are others. I just looked at some of the language being used by those in Vermont who are pushing for an end-of-life death with dignity law there. You know, if indeed you're going to say that a life that involves some lingering at the end before death is a death without dignity, then the logic would be that you try to achieve dignity. But you're going to try to do it on human terms. You're going to try to use humanistic reasoning to try to come up with how to achieve dignity at the end of life. And you may decide, I don't want to go through A, B, C, or D. But you know, friends, it just may be that the Christian thing to do is to go through some of those crises. There is no easy exit from all pain. There is no easy exit from all struggle. And the idea that we should package and conceive what some are calling a good death as a death without the loss of any dignity and the death without any pain or lingering is, I think, an illusion. And one that we as Christians should name for what it is. It's the attempt to try to gain lordship over our own lives at the end of life. By deciding, I'm not going to go through that. I'm not going to suffer that. I'm simply going to take this way out. These are difficult issues. There is no just absolutely right and wrong answer, even on the question of living wills, I would argue. They may be right in some circumstances, but even there, they're not enough. We need to have very serious conversations with our loved ones and the ones who will be making those medical decisions for us with medical authorities. If it hasn't happened to your family yet, it will happen one day. I agree with George Philos on only one thing. The Terry Schiavo case should be a wake-up call. But I have to take it in another direction entirely. It should be a wake-up call to what has already been lost in terms of the dignity of human life. It's up to us to recover it, and we better work fast. I'll be back with some final thoughts. This is Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. In the shadow of this morning's death of Terry Schiavo, we've been talking about that tragedy, what it means for the culture of life, what it means for America, what it means for each one of us. And we've been looking specifically at the issue of the living will, also known in some contexts as an advance directive. And we've been asking the question, well, how should we as Christians respond to this? There are those who are saying this is the way out. This is the mechanism of making sure we don't end up in this kind of situation where you have family member against family member. I've tried to give a reasonable and informed understanding of this, to try to think it through with you, and to issue some concerns about the claim that a living will is the way out of this. I acknowledge there are some contexts in which they may be helpful and healthy, especially as one may be able more closely to anticipate the exact context in which such a directive might be used and interpreted. But just in terms of a general notion, I think that they promise far more than they deliver, for reasons that have to do with medicine, law, and frankly, just the human equation as well. Terry Schiavo was a Roman Catholic by her identification, as are her parents, and of course the Vatican took a special interest in her life and in her death. Today the Vatican denounced what it described as the arbitrarily hastened death of Terry Schiavo, declared this a violation of principles of Christianity and civilization, and one cardinal described her death as, quote, a death sentence executed through a cruel method. Vatican spokesman Joaquin Navarro-Valls said an existence was interrupted, a death was arbitrarily hastened, because nourishing a person can never be considered employing exceptional means, end quote. All that takes on a particularly poignant meaning when the news is just coming in, a claim from CNN that the Pope John Paul II, has been given the last rites. There is activity outside the hospital there in Rome, and there has been a flow of reports all day long suggesting that the Pope has been falling into a more serious medical crisis, now with some kind of high fever and a urological infection. But now CNN is reporting that the Pope has received the last rites. According to Catholic officials, this does not mean necessarily that the Pope is dying, but he is clearly a very, very sick man. And quite honestly, we all need to look at this seriously and recognize that here again is a man whose life is on the line, and who just in recent days, if not hours, has been receiving a feeding tube. There'll be a lot of discussion about this, Pope, and there already has been and will be in the future, and we'll be a part of that conversation. But for now, the most important thing is we need to pray for him. Every human life is important. Every human life has dignity. And we're the people who know that, and we're the people who know why. It is because God made us in his image. It is because every single human life is important. And it's because human life deserves defense at every age, at every stage, in every condition. Be back tomorrow from Destin, Florida. This is Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.